wanted to say to us this morning. So it kind of reads a little bit like a Corinthians greatest hits, because all these passages you probably would have heard before, which is a good thing because there'll be a bit of familiarity there. But hopefully we can sort of breathe some new life into them and God can really show you something new this morning. So to start with, let's open to Corinthians 12 if you've got a Bible with you. It is going to be on the screen, but due to a recent shift in software or some sort of thing, we've got the New King James on the screen, but I'm going to read the NIV. So if you like therefores and stuff like that, the one on the screen is probably the version for you. If you like it slightly simpler, just listen. All right, so Corinthians 12, starting at verse 12. Now, if I can read it in these lights with my aging eyes, that will be another miracle. Okay, one body, many parts. The body is a unit, though it is made up of many parts, and though all its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, slave or free, and we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Now the body is not made up of one part, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason cease to be part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? And if the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has arranged the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. The eye cannot say to the head, to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honourable, we treat with special honour. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honour to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honoured, every part rejoices with it. So I wanted to have a look about today, a little bit about the body and the parts and trying to work out where we fit in. It's been really important for me growing up as an adult. When you're a child, your parents tell you what you can and can't do and they push you in certain directions and discourage you from other things. But as you get older, you've got to work out what you're going to do for yourself. For me, being in church, some of you know I play music on the music team. Obviously, I preach sometimes. There's a few different things I do. And so it was important for me to work out exactly what part am I and what's my role to play. These days, I know what I do and I know what I don't do. Every week I get the text talking about setting up church on Saturday afternoon. And I love getting that text and I pray for the guys and I'm glad that they're setting up. But I know that I don't do Saturday afternoon setup. Now, that's not a hard and fast rule. If I really was convicted, I would, of course, do it. I get the men's group message that whenever they meet every Monday night. I love getting that message and I pray for the men's group, but I never go to the men's group because I go to music every Wednesday. And my wife, Jo, works shifts. So some nights of the week, she's out of the house. And if I go to everything that's on, I will run around being a busy church member, but I won't have time for my own headspace. I won't have time for my family. And the things I do will be hurried and haphazard and poor quality. And so what I've had to work out is, who am I? Who does God want me to be? What do I do and what do I not do? So now it's really easy. When I was younger, I'd feel a little bit guilty every time I got asked to do anything and felt like I should do it. There was a season in my life when I was a young adult, still single, and I had a church-related thing on almost every night of the week except Saturday night. And at that stage, it was probably good for me as a young single guy to be going to church things and not running around everywhere else. But that now would be unhealthy for me. There was another stage in life when the church was in transition that we were doing a lot. Joe and I were doing a lot of stuff. And it was starting to get weary. And God said to me, what you're doing is not sustainable, but it's only for a season. And I knew he would give us grace for that season. And so we went through that season, and then a lot of those burdens that we were carrying and things were involved in that needed to be done, other people came and took those burdens. And we had a break and we were relieved. So the really essential thing is, who are you and where do you fit in? So that's my first slide. It's what kind of body part are you? And it can take a while to figure that out. Often what we are relates pretty closely to how we're made. There was a time when I took a break from being in the music team. I needed to, and it was a good thing. And I thought, where am I going to serve? And I thought, well, the most desperate need at the moment in church seems to be the kids team. And I said to Joe, I think you're going on the kids roster. And Joe was like, really? And I even rang Brad and said, Brad, I'm thinking about just doing kids for a while. And he's like, well, if you want to. And then I realized we also need the sound guys, and that related to music, and I was probably going to be more useful there. So usually, God made you and then didn't go, okay, I've got Richard over here, he can play music, but forget all that, I'm going to use him over here to, you know, do something completely different. Usually, what you're called to do relates to how you're made. It makes sense, because God didn't make you and then go, now what am I going to do with this person? He made you for a purpose. So if you're trying to find out, where do I fit into all this? What do you like? What do you like? What are you good at? They're good starting points. Knowing yourself. And like I said, when I was younger, I did more. Then I had a phase where I did less, where I needed a break. Now I'm doing a medium amount, I think. But it's important to know, okay, if I'm a foot, I don't have to worry about seeing. So work out, what do you think you look like? Don't turn to the person next to you and tell them they look like a foot. But sometimes you need someone else's help to find out who you are. Sometimes it's obvious to everyone else except you. So if you're really struggling, where do I fit in? Ask people that know you or ask people you trust. If you're in youth, ask a youth leader. If you're in a small group, talk to your small group about it. Say, I'm really just floating around. I don't know what to do with myself. Ask people around you. So really important to know, what kind of body part are you? Secondly, where do you fit into the body? So if you're going to write two things down today, they would probably be the ones I want you to write down. What kind of body part are you? Where do you fit into the body? Because the right parts in the right place is really important. A foot on the front of my forehead, well, I wouldn't be up here preaching if that were the case. It's got to be assembled properly. Having said that, you know, God can do anything with anything, but generally speaking, the right part's in the right place. So finding where you fit. A, what are you? And two, where do you fit? These are really key things because they're a principle that Paul builds on a lot in Corinthians and that I want to build into today. The church in Corinth had been established for a little while when Paul wrote this. They had some problems. They had people that were wealthy. They had people that were poor. They had people that thought they were really spiritual. They had new converts. They had some Jews. They had some Greeks. They had people that were slaves, people that used to be slaves, people that still owned slaves. It was a real mix. They had a real range of issues. And getting that huge range of people to work together in one body was sometimes a challenge for them. And so that's one of the themes in Corinthians that Paul is building on. The key thing is knowing where you fit in the body, because it's great to know you're a foot, but if you're a foot floating around on its own, it's A, not very useful, and any part of the body that's cut off from the body always dies. Now, this is a metaphor. If you're washed up on a on a deserted island and you can't be part of a Christian body, your faith can live. It's a metaphor. You can't take it too far. But generally speaking, and I've seen it so many times, Christians that isolate themselves from other Christians nearly always die because we need each other. And we don't just need to receive, we need to give. And so, A, what are you? Where do you fit? And then are you connected in? So being a part of the body, I want to make it clear, isn't only coming to church. It's not that at all. It's a small part of it. It's small groups. It's serving, whether it's on Saturday afternoon or whether it's playing an instrument or whether it's making coffees. But it's also a lot of other things too. It's meeting with other believers during the week because I'm having a hard time and I need to talk to someone who's going to pick me up and strengthen me, or when I have a friend and the situation's reversed. It's being available to our neighbours. That's part of a body. If you're part of the hand, if you're the hand that should be reaching out, you can't just be doing church work all the time. It's keeping accountable to each other as well. So it's easy sometimes to just go, yeah, I do these three church things. That's my Christianity done. and I'll live the rest of my life for myself. That was a challenge for me when I was so busy doing church stuff and then became less busy. It's like, so now am I just going to do nothing? I used to be able to appease my conscience and going, yeah, I did all this church stuff this week. You know, I've done enough. When I didn't have that just making me do stuff, I had to go, actually, what does God want me to do of my own accord to be useful to him? And so we don't want to fall in the trap of just thinking it's all about church, because church should be an expression of what we have. It shouldn't be the only thing we have. So a lot of people say, yeah, I go to church, but I don't get much out of it. Or I stopped going because, you know, I didn't get much from it. I didn't benefit much. I got stuck in really long conversations that were really boring. Sometimes the preaching was bad. This person prayed for me and it was weird and I was confused. All those things can, and if you stick around long enough, will happen. But God works all things together for good. If my purpose is to draw closer to him, and someone prays for me and they say something that's weird and confusing, what do? I go back to God and say, this person prayed and it blew my mind, either because you are saying something profound to me, God, or they're on another planet, one of the two. But we have to go to God and sift through that and learn something about ourselves and about what God actually is saying to us. When we hear a sermon, we go, oh, I don't know if I agree with the guy on that. What do? If we're going to be constructive about it, during the week, go to your word, go to certain parts of the internet, talk to friends, look things up, learn something for yourself. Whether it's good or bad, God can bring good out of it. It's really just a starting point. And people say, you know, you come to church and you need to be fed. And that is true. But what adult can't feed themselves? As you grow in your faith, you should not be relying on anything that any of us on a Sunday morning give you to sustain your faith. We should live by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So a mature Christian should be able to go sit down with his Bible and a quiet little bit of time with God and be fed. And if you haven't got that, then you're really not mature. And I don't say that to make people feel bad about themselves, but you need to know where you're at. You know, you need someone to call out. If you've got a coach and you think you're going to the Olympics and you run 100 meters in 19 seconds, the coach is going to say, you're not even in the ballpark. You're not an Olympic athlete. Now, it'd be wrong for us to say, yeah, we're all great people, we're all mature Christians, but if we can't read God's word and get something from it, we still have growing to do. And that should be an encouragement and a challenge to you. And there'll be bits that come easy. If you're really struggling, start in the book of James. It's one of the first, earliest books we have from the New Testament written. It's simple. Some theologians hate it because it's all just there. There's not much to explain. But ask God. But you have to seek it out. And these days, it's easier than it's ever been. There are so many resources, churches putting up their sermons online, even Bible schools putting up their lectures online. There's so much resource there. If you want to learn, it's there. Never has it been easier. You know, God put us in this age for a reason, and as much as we hate what the internet can do, God uses everything for good. There's never been an easier time to know about God and to find stuff out than there is now. Just like when the Roman Empire started, it was the evil Roman Empire, and they built roads all around the known world, and it was like these terrible roads the Romans built that spread their tyranny everywhere, but those same roads spread the gospel. And that's the reason why at that point in time suddenly the gospel could spread in a way it never did before. And today we go, this terrible internet that's leading everyone astray, which it is partly true, but God can use it. So there is no excuse to say I'm not being fed. If you're not being fed, A, you're a baby, or you're not feeding yourself. Whichever is the scenario, you need to address that. That's part of just being accountable, part of growing and taking responsibility for who you are. So in this analogy, it says Christ is the head. And this is a real mystery. It says the head can't say to the foot, I don't need you. Christ needs us. And this is a real mystery because on the one hand, we go, God is supreme. His will be done. Nothing we do can stop God from doing his will. But on the other hand, he uses us. He needs us to do things. He calls on us to do things. And they're not like token jobs. Sometimes Violet asks me to help. I'll ask if she can help me do something. And I'll be screwing things away and she'll pass me a screw and hold a bit of wood for me. And afterwards she'll go, did you really need me to do that? Would that have been like hard if I wasn't here? She's basically saying, am I actually being useful? And sometimes I think we think it's like that with God. It's like, oh yeah, God has little jobs for us to do. But he's doing his thing and he patronizingly will bring us in if we want to. But it's not that. God has a purpose to work out through his body, and that's us. Working out, you know, what if God wants to do something and I refuse, how does it get done? That's his problem. All I know is that A, God is supreme, his will be done, but we have a role in it. And the head needs the body, not in the same way that the body needs the head, that's for sure. But Christ is the head. So we can't all be self-centered Christians. It's not all about us. That's the next thing I want to move on to. A is knowing where you are, but then looking outwards. Again, a lot of Christians say, I come to church, there's nothing for me. I don't get fed. You know, it doesn't build my faith. It doesn't stir my emotions. And we sort of stumble because our relationship with God, our following Christ, is self-centered. And for some reason it doesn't work because being a Christian is following somebody who laid down everything he had and did nothing for himself but everything for others. So can you see why it doesn't work when we make Christianity self-centered? It couldn't be more opposite. Saying, I'm following a guy who laid down everything that he had, which was heaven and glory, to serve others, and I'm really focused on me. And for some reason those two things aren't lining up. When you look at it like that, it's obvious. Any form of self-centered Christianity isn't Christianity. It's like Christian-themed self-help. And there's no power in that. So Jesus said, if you know, my disciples will hear my voice, they will know the truth, and the truth will set them free. And that was in the context of him talking about laying down his life to die. And so that truth, knowing that truth, sets us free. Because the world constantly says, look in yourself, take care of yourself, look after number one. I mean, if you look in it in sort of either in a humanistic or even an Eastern way, it's, yeah, look within yourself. The answers are within. Everything is within. And as a society, we become more and more enslaved to depression and anxiety and all sorts of mental health issues because the opposite is truth. I mean, the opposite is knowing that Jesus is the truth. And to heal yourself, you actually look outwards, firstly to him and then to others. Which is a really important thing to do because it's so countercultural these days. So, knowing his will puts us on the right path, and that's towards God's purpose. Because remember I said, God made us a certain way for a certain reason. And so when we look to him and say, what is that purpose and reason? We find the best version of ourselves. We find the truest version of ourselves. We find who we're made to be. So Paul talks about all this in Corinthians. And about the body and the parts, and he talks also about spiritual gifts, and some of them were even getting proud because some of them had spiritual gifts and some didn't. This is how sort of juvenile they were, some Christians lording it over others that I can speak in tongues and you can't. But he says, all right, I've given you instruction about all that, but now I'll show you the most excellent way. Now I'll show you the best way. Now I'll show you the way that is above all other things. Understanding the roles and the structure is important, but there's something that outweighs all that. And you will have heard this verse. In the movie Wedding Crashers, they have a bet about whether the guy in the wedding is going to read this verse from Corinthians or some other one. I think it's one from Romans. I can't remember. Didn't have time to go back and watch the movie. But, you know, as I read it, no one's going to walk down the aisle or anything like that. But it is an amazing verse. Hopefully it is one that you have heard. But here we go. Hang on, I've got to tilt it again so that my 45-year-old eyes can see my tiny font in my Bible. And now I'll show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Thank you. Okay, thanks, Rodney. It was a bit cheesy. I'm still slightly cringing. But I hope it proved a point. Because while the symbol was going, I explained how the pyramids were made. I explained where the planes in the Bermuda Triangle went. Why the knights will never get out of the bottom four. All sorts of things. But it illustrates that point. Sometimes Christians as though think they know it all. But if you don't have love behind what you're saying, if you're not motivated by love for others, it's exactly that. All you're hearing is a horrible noise. And that was a good noise. That was a Zildjian A symbol, like A series thin crash. That's a good symbol. But it will still give you a headache. And often if we're enthusiastically or even worse, self-righteously proclaiming, thus says the Lord, to people that we have no real connection with, who don't know us and know our heart, you've got to tread really carefully because it just comes across like that. People don't care about what you say unless they think you care about them. And that's what Paul's saying here. He's like, you can have a great church. You can have all the parts in the right place. That's all a good foundation. But if you're not operating out of love, that's all you're going to get. Noise that's annoying and will give you a headache. So now we'll read it, the rest of it. So if I do not have love, I'm nothing but a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Picking it up in verse 2. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. And here's the wedding bit. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. And so the point is that all these other things will pass away, but love continues. And I said here's the wedding bit because we always think of it that way and we think of it describing romantic love, but he's talking about the church. That should describe the interactions of people within the church first and foremost. And as a church to those outside, demonstrating that kind of love, patient, not self-seeking, no record of wrongs, kind, thinking of others. And it's a real challenge for us because you think, yeah, maybe I can manage that with my wife or my husband or, you know, someone that I really love. I try and do it with my kids. But when you think that's meant to be my attitude to everyone here and everyone in that body of believers first and foremost. And then as a group, we're supposed to be just demonstrating that level of love to the world around us. It took me back when I thought about it like that. It was a little bit of it was a real challenge. Because one day I was praying about all this stuff and about church and different ways of doing church and all the ways churches have been done over the last 2,000 years. And I said, Lord, why? Hey, there's not that many specific instructions about how to do church in the Bible. I thought, what is it actually meant to be? And I felt like God say, it's mostly just all the believers getting together and loving God and loving each other. If you're doing those things, whatever else you do is going to be pretty good. And if you're not doing those things, whatever else you do is going to be either a performance or a show or a clanging cymbal. But it's not going to be effective and it's not going to represent God's heart, the heart that he has for us, the heart that he has for the rest of the world. So it's really important that A, we know who we are, and B, that what we're doing is not focused on self. And you can have a selfish motive to this because even, you know, a psychiatrist or a psychologist would do, if you want to, will tell you, if you want to be happy, A, stop thinking about yourself so much. It's one of those truths that is a universal truth. There's so much in the Bible that is just universal truth, and over time, different fields of science or society will catch up with it, but it's just a universal truth that is true, that if you don't always think about yourself, you'll actually be happier. It's a counterintuitive thing, is to make yourself happy, focus on making others happy. And I mean, that's the golden rule, isn't it? Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. So throughout Corinthians, Paul encourages them to have all these gifts, to do amazing things, but to do everything with love, so that everything that they do builds up one another, that they're not doing things for themselves. So in Corinthians 14, 18 and 19, Paul says, again, they're talking about different gifts. And he says, I thank God that I speak in tongues more than all of you. But in the church, I'd rather speak 5 intelligible words to instruct others than 10,000 words in a tongue. So the tongue, he said, is only, speaking in tongues is really just the benefit of the person that does it. And he's saying, I'd rather speak 5 useful words to the church than 10,000 impressive spiritual words that might make you think I'm some sort of spiritual guru. So I've got a little diagram to represent that. First of all, we have in the PowerPoint there, James, 10,000 dots. And there they are. And now we've got 5 dots on the next slide. And then we've got a comparison of the two. That's Paul's ratio of how much I should be focused on myself and how much my words should be focused on others. I would rather say 5 useful things to someone else than 10,000 things that make me look good. I'd rather come to church and do one tiny useful thing than play amazing music and then pray at the end and prophesy for people and have everyone think, man, that guy's so spiritual. If I'm not doing that out of that love motive, that's just 10,000 meaningless words. And more important that we say 5 effective ones. So again, it makes us think about our life. What are we actually doing? What are we valuing? Even in our walk with God, are we trying to keep up appearances? Are we trying to look good to others? Are we trying to impress others? Or are we trying to build other people up? The reason I say this now and I feel like God put it on my heart is it's the start of a new year. It's always a good time to look ahead as to what we're going to do, what our life's going to look like this year, what do we value, where are we going. We've got Vision Sunday next week. I'm sure Brad and other people in the team will outline what we're doing as a church. So on that church level, you can have a look and go, okay, I'm a foot. What roles in this thing this year are good for feet? Or I'm a hand. What suits a hand? What suits me? Where can I fit in? Rather than thinking, what are these things that are going to bless me? What are the things that the church are going to do am I excited about and are going to feed me? But rather thinking, what's the church doing that I can be part of? And so I encourage you with that to think that way. But very importantly, don't just limit it to church. It's our whole life. This year, how can I serve others outside of this church? How can I serve others where there's possibly no opportunity for any sort of reward, any sort of payback? How can I just love other people for the sake of loving other people to demonstrate what Christ is like? So as we finish, there's practical ways we can do that. Like I said, get in a group. Get people around you that know you. Help them to help you discover who you are. See what they say about you. If you're not sure where you fit, even in this church, find a small group. It's hard to connect just on a Sunday. I always say to people, not much is going to happen until you're in some other sort of group. For me, my main one is the music team on Wednesday. And like Amy said, it's more than just getting there and practicing. It's a ministry. It is a Thrive group. And we often pray for quite a while and we build each other up. But maybe it's the Monday night men's thing. Maybe it's another Thrive group. There's lots of ways to do it. Maybe it's finding 2 or 3 guys that are at a similar sort of level to you or above you or that you want to mentor and just getting together with them week to week and sharing where you're at and praying for each other. But you need to find something beyond just Sunday so that A, you can be serving others and that they can be helping build you up and keep you on track. So the last slide is just really encapsulates what I want you to think about today. I felt like God wanted you to take this away and weigh it up as you think about your year. So what is your role? Where do you fit? And then how can your faith be a benefit to others? Because if your faith's not benefiting others, it's better than no faith at all, but it is often just that loud clanging cymbal driving people away. Because the purpose of our life is to glorify God. But it's important that we understand, how does he want us to glorify him? To say, yeah, we were made to glorify God. Pretty broad statement. How? What does that actually look like? Well, the most practical instruction we have is meeting together, looking out for each other, serving one another, all the things I've talked about this morning. So if we do that, it sets us free from the spirit of this age, which is really inward, self-looking, and leads on a downward spiral to depression and anxiety and, you know, eventually even suicide and things like that, because we don't have the answers in ourselves. But God does. Before you were born, he made you for a purpose. Ask him, what is that purpose? And if we find that, we find that best version of ourselves. We find who we were meant to be. We find real freedom in knowing who we are, what we can do, what we should do, and what we don't have to worry about. So I'll leave that with you.